can match perfectly to that because it's static, but it has roughness, which corresponds to a potential at all possible different wavelengths. And so it can create or absorb such zero energy excitations. And then if you were to try to have the superfluid go faster, then all kinds of excitations would be radiated. Okay, so this is all just exactly like non-relativistic Galilean systems. And it's true too. Light's special. Okay, so what I was going to do today was this problem of Cooper pairing. And so the problem here is to consider the effect of the interaction, the attractive interaction, on two electrons that we add to a system which otherwise has a filled Fermi C. And you can write down that wave function as for the Cooper pair. Depends on the positions of the two electrons. And we're going to assume that the two electrons that were in the center of mass frame for this pair, and that the Fermi surface is the system, these electrons have equal and opposite momentum. Okay. But it can be anything. And so then we're going to add into a filled Fermi city. So these creation operators can only add electrons outside of the filled Fermi city. If it tries to do it inside, can't, then you get zero. It doesn't contribute. Okay.
Talk
about adding electrons to free Fermi C.
When in the Fermi C, add electrons,
it's
mutual principle to prevent that.
I'm sorry, when it's what?
Yeah, in the Fermi C, you want to add electrons in Fermi C?
Just outside.
Oh, just outside.
Just outside. So you add it into the lowest empty states. Okay, I mean, you know, typically, you know, because of the phase space, there'll be a few empty states left at EF. Okay, I mean, well, if you're working with a fixed number of electrons, or alternatively, you can add electrons infinitesimally above EF. Either way. But the point is that this K is going to be K, this magnitude of K will be greater than KF. Okay. So the Schrodinger equation for this will look something like this. So there'll be the kinetic energy of the two particles in state K. We'll multiply this coefficient.
2 h bar squared k squared over 2 m squared, or what's the
square? Sorry, that's the effect of the house. Sorry. Yeah. And just 2, because there's 2 on.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so what? So the effect of this pair interaction basically is to you have to rotate the k. So in other words, you have electrons that come in with that have k and minus k, and they scatter and they go to k prime and minus k prime, conserving energy. And they go to k and k minus k prime. And this thing here is the I guess this should have a k in it. Well, this is the energy measured with respect to 2EF of this pair. Okay. So let's see. You can bring the you can solve this, combine the coefficients of A of k. Oh, let me put a, Now let me put a prime on this sum. So this only, so remember we said we're going to make a simplifying approximation for the effective interaction. We're going to say the electron-photon interaction is only attractive when the difference in energy between the initial and final states of an electron is less than the typical photon frequency. But we said there's this simplifying approximation that you can make, that BCS made and people suggested, that the way to say that is that this thing is only non-zero over states for which these things are within what do we call it, omega to pi of EF. Finish my sentence. Okay? So if you assume that the single particle electron states in both the initial and scattered state are both within a negative I of EF, and that if that's the case, then there's an attractive interaction minus V, which I think might actually be minus V over the volume, or which I definitely don't want to write down, or minus V over the number of sites, just size of the sample. Then this sum simplifies. And in fact, you can calculate the sum over k prime of k, of a of k, sorry. Sum over k on both sides. Here on the right hand side, I'm going to write V of k prime is minus V over n, sum over prime k. I'm writing this out very explicitly. So basically what I've done is I've summed both sides over k. I've used the fact that this thing is only non-zero if both k and k prime are within omega divided, well, sorry, that this is a constant for this range of summation, which is a constant I'm calling minus v over n. The minus sign comes from the fact that it's attractive. And in fact, you can now see that on, you've got the same sum of coupling coefficients on both sides. So assuming they're not zero, you can divide them out. Yeah.
Why are we considering only the why are we not considering the spin of the two particle wave function?
Okay, so we're looking at the case where the ground state is a singlet. Okay, this is presumably a singlet because it's got equal numbers of up and down spins. And then we're looking at the case where this is a singlet. I mean, your question sort of opens up a whole subject of an interesting one, which hopefully we can touch on briefly next week, as to whether Cooper pairs are always singlets. In fact, the very interesting case of superfluid helium 3 and probably some exotic metals. In the case of superfluid helium 3, it's known that Cooper pairs are triplets. Okay, and that's it would I think slightly change the form here. I mean, we can think about that. We'll look at that next week. But the assumption here is that it's a Cooper pair and it's a singlet state composed of a linear combination of equal and opposite momenta summed over equal and opposite momenta. Okay, let me just remind you, without going through a bunch of algebra, that if you change the sum to an integral, I think all I want to say is it goes to this sum over k goes to the density of states we worked that out the other day. And so this sum goes to minus v. So where this thing is the energy, this is an integration variable, obviously, but it's the way that I've written it here, it's the energy with respect to EF. So basically, in fact, you can see that right here, because this, or with the two, might as well put it with, well, with or without the two, is, say without the two, is this. Oh, sorry. Let's say that slightly differently. This is this. And according to, you know, in solving for this wave function, this should equal 1. That's that 1. Now, this integral is over the range of a phonon frequency, which is small on the scale of electronic structure. And so the density of electronic states in this region of Fermi energy, whose width is the phonon frequency, can be taken to be constant. In fact, that's usually called N of zero. And so what we have here is that M0 VF over, I'm going to take a 2, I guess, integral 0 to omega divide dc over c minus epsilon over 2. And this is just a logarithm. When I say just a logarithm, it's an important logarithm. So it's the kind that you sweep under the rug. So this thing here is log of what? Omega by minus epsilon over 2 over minus epsilon over 2. Lest it worry you that you've got minus signs inside your logarithm, epsilon's going to have negative. So it's fine. And that's equal to, just bringing this over to the other side, 2 over n of 0 v. So you can exponentiate. Or epsilon is minus 2 omega divide over E 2 over n of 0 v plus 1, minus 1. So this is the binding energy. there are three things that I want to say about this. The fact that this extra Cooper pair that you've added goes in with an energy less than 2EF, because it's 2EF minus this little piece, represents an instability of the system. It's not a well-defined answer, but it's telling you that there's a problem. That's one thing that I wanted to say about this. The second thing that one conventionally says about this is that it's hard to get this out of perturbation theory, because in perturbation theory, you would expand, say, in, as we did, say, for nearly free electrons, in the potential over EF. Actually, 1 over EF is sort of like the density of states of Fermi energy, as we saw. But this is sort of a non-perturbative result, because the V, N of 0 V, enters inversely up in the exponential. So it's hard to see how you can get this out of perturbation theory, which probably people have been trying to do for 45 years. Everything else, perturbation theory works great for electrons and metals, but here it didn't. Let me just say that typically N of 0 V is perturbative. In other words, this attractive net attractive interaction due to the lattice distortion when you subtract out the effects of the counter effects of Coulomb interactions and so forth, it's not very big. So it could, especially compared to the Fermi energy, so that N of 0 V, which goes like the V over the Fermi energy, is some tiny number. So this exponent, this exponent is huge, and so this is usually written minus 2 omega to by e to the minus 2 over N of 0 V. And then finally, what I would say about this is, how come we were so clever that we were able to get out this non-weak, being Cooper, of course, we're able to get out this totally non-perturbative result? Which 50 years ago was even surprising. And the answer is because we actually solved the problem of the bound state. Okay, so we basically solved that exactly for this cooked up potential that I, this cooked up potential. We could solve that exactly. Whenever you can solve a quantum mechanics problem exactly, you know, then it's a, if it's a different quantum mechanics problem, then it's a valuable result. Okay, so that's the Cooper thing. Now, we actually have the whole wave function, by the way. You can go back and calculate this, because we know everything. And I think it's like some tutorial or something. I mean, it actually leads to an interesting quantity. This quantity here is a little bit like the superconducting energy gap. As we'll see when we do the real theory, and the size of the Cooper pair is what's called the superconducting coherence line, the bare superconducting coherence line. It has, well, okay. Okay, so let's do the real thing. So basically, Bardeen, Cooper, and Schrieffer proposed that the ground state, the superconducting ground state, was some superposition of Cooper pairs in all possible states. So they built. Not actually these, but going just back to these, starting with these k minus k pairs. Singlet k minus k pairs. Now there's, you know, there's good arguments, there's good reasons why they considered singlet pairs, and it has to do with the connection between the spin of the pair state and its spatial part of its wave function, that if the spatial part of the wave function is symmetric, then the spin part for that pair wave function should be a singlet, which is anti-symmetric. So that's the argument. And so if you think the potential is one, where those electrons, these two electrons, say, any two electrons, are orbiting around, and you think that basically they like to be in the same region of space, maybe somewhat retarded in their being there, as we described in the case of moving in the wake of the other, one moving in the wake of the other, but still, that you might think that this symmetrical wave function would be the one that takes best advantage of this effective interaction. Okay. So, go ahead.
But in the wave function that we use, if we consider the singlet case for the spin, mm-hmm. why do we have to expand in? In exponential, instead of just taking the cosine part of the integral kx, k.
Why don't we expand this in k?
In the exponential, because if we exchange the two fermions,
yeah,
for each that is symmetric, at least the exponential part, you have to move the sine part because sine is anti-symmetric.
No, I think that what it says is that a of k and a of minus k are going to be equal. See what I'm saying? Or maybe something like that. You can construct a real symmetric wave function from this state. Okay, no problem. Okay. So that's why. So what about helium 3? So now I keep mentioning the fact that helium 3, which is a neutral fermionated liquid, goes into a superconducting state. There's some interaction between the helium atoms, which is like what? Van der Waals. How would you expect that to work? Would you expect them to want to be in a singlet state? Since I'm sort of leading you on to answer my own question. Actually, they like to, there's a big hard core, and they sort of like to stay out of each other's way. And so they would actually do better with a wave function that had a node when they were at the same place. Okay? And you can do that by looking at an angular momentum state, which is a higher angular momentum state, for instance, a P wave or a D wave, okay, which has a node. If the wave function turned out to be a D wave function, then you could still have a singlet state because the D wave function is symmetric under interchange spatial part. But as it turns out, the wave function is P wave, and it's anti-symmetric, which means that the spins want to add to one. So that's the triplet, the origin, if you like, of the triplet.
So if it's P wave or D wave, what does that mean in terms of the wave function?
Well, you know, just think of the wave function of a pair of atoms that are bound into a molecular state.
Okay.
I guess for the H2 molecule, it's a symmetric. It has all kinds of states.
Okay.
The lowest one is fully symmetric state, zero angular momentum.
But the P waves and D waves, like, what are they?
They look like, you know, they have nodes. So like Px goes like x times e to the minus r.
Okay.
You go from x to minus x, you get a minus sign. Okay, so it's P wave in the coordinate of the relative position of the particles. This A dot R1 minus R2. So that's the way molecular physicists can think about it. Okay. But in any case, BCX argued on, as it turned out, solid grounds that we expect this to be any pair will be in a singlet state. And so we can work with these. And so they wrote down a variational wave function, a very, very interesting variational wave function. Okay, so that's a very interesting quantum many-body wave function. You can think of these U's and V's as being variational. You're going to choose the U's and V's, which I don't think we have to leave yet. But you can choose the U's and the V's, which minimize the expectation value of the Hamiltonian, where the Hamiltonian is the one that has this weak attraction. And this K here is summed over all possible single particle states. So if you're in free space, it's summed over all free particle states. K goes from 0 to infinity, or over the size of your sample. It goes from 0 to infinity. If you're in a lattice, it's summed over all the states, I guess, in that case, in the Brillouin zone. But when you look at this, I mean, the first thing that you ask, what's the first thing that you ask when you look at this? What's different between this wave function and the other ones that you might have been used to?
Well, it's something plus the vacuum.
This is on the vacuum, yeah. So this is no electrons.
Right, but so it means it's a combination of states with electrons and the vacuum.
Right, right. How many electrons?
Well,
the point is that when you multiply this thing out and you look at it term by term, many terms have different numbers of pairs of electrons, right? You know, you'll have, like, say there's a term that's just UK operating on the vacuum over all K. And that has no electrons. There'll be a term that has one factor of this and n minus one factors of that if you're working in Brillouin single band. And on and on and on. So this is a state which has an indefinite number of electrons. It's not, by the way, a state that has an infinite number of electrons or even all the numbers of, in the band. That turns out to be extremely unlikely, because if you put the system in equilibrium with a particle path that defines the value of the chemical potential, you'll find that there is a well-defined, well-determined number of electrons, which is determined by the chemical potential. Increase the chemical potential, you push more electrons in, you get more Cooper pairs. If you reduce the chemical potential, you use something out, you have fewer. But the point is that for this wave function, what I was just arguing, you can define an average number of electrons. And I would even go further and argue that it's a sharp quantity. In other words, if you calculate the average of n minus n average squared, and divide by the number, by the average number, you get zero, or you know, you get something that says like one over 100 particles.
What if you calculate the average and then divide by the average?
Yeah, so to delta n, so you calculate delta n squared. Okay, so that's the average value of the difference of the number of particles from its mean value. And basically the statement that I made said that this goes like n. Okay, so if you take the ratio of so for a large macroscopic system, this is actually this point. Nevertheless, the fact that the number of particles, although well-defined in the thermodynamic sense, is clearly indefinite just by explicit calculation, that actually offends a lot of people, and would make smart people doubt that this theory could be correct. Okay, I won't name any names, but people who you would recognize don't like this. Now, one of the things that people often rush to say is that. By the way, there's a condition here that uk squared plus dk squared equals 1 by normalization. You're free to fix the phase. To be real. And so you can write the BKs as just explicitly displaying the phase. And so, by considering this wave function for all possible values of phi k, you can define right, this line. And so you can explicitly construct a state which has a definite number of particles from various of these BCS wave functions, where the only thing that's varying is all of these RKs. So as I was writing this on the board, I was racking my brain to try to recall whether I had ever seen anyone go to the next step of actually using this to calculate some quantity. Dennis, have you ever seen anyone use this?
No.
So nobody uses this. It's just used as a convince yourself and others that it is possible to work with a well-defined number of particles. So much as working in the Grand Canonical Ensemble with the particle bath is so much easier for everything in normal electron physics, it's also much easier to work with this wave function which indefinite numbers of particles for superconducting physics. So at this point, what we should do is, by the way, being able to write down a many body wave function is just a tremendous accomplishment. It's one of these things that doesn't happen very often in physics. I mean, like writing down the wave function for non-interacting free particles, well, that's one. Writing down this BCS wave function, that's another. Bob Laughlin wrote down a wave function which was nearly exact for two-dimensional electrons in a strong magnetic field, and which actually is exact for some slightly cooked-up potential. Just being able to write down the answer, that's also a pedagogical statement. Being able to write down the answer is just a tremendously powerful way of having solved the problem. Okay, when you can do that, you've really done something. Yeah.
Why are we integrating over 5?
Yeah, because this basically, when you multiply this out, you have a gazillion terms, every one of which has a different, did I get this wrong? I think I did this wrong. Yeah, this is not 5k, this is 5. Is
that right? Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, that's right. That was, sorry. You guys kept something before? Okay.
So how do you get from?
Okay, so basically what happens here is that when you multiply this out, every one of these terms has a certain number of EVI phis in it. And actually, probably I should do this.
Yep, yeah.
That's better. It's getting better. And when they add up, if they don't add up to n over 2, then you get 0 when you do this integral around phi. Okay? But if they do add up to n over 2, then you get 1. Okay? So by setting the phase of b to be EI phi for every b, and then multiplying by e to the minus I n phi over 2 and integrating over phi, you pick out the specific terms that have n over 2 to prepare. Oh. All of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. That was very important.
But you can also have the phase.
Yeah, but actually, you can sort of factor that out from this sum. So that it's only the relative phase of the U and the V that matter?
So the idea of putting, making that phi over 2 is because if you factorize the phase for UK, then it need not necessarily be.
What's that?
What I'm saying is UK also has a phase. Right. So
yeah, but I think it just as in the wave function, you're free to multiply it by a phase, and it doesn't make any difference.
Yes, but then if you multiply, then you have to change the phase outside because you have
right.
To
yeah, and that's not going to matter. Yeah, that's basically what you're saying. Okay, but basically the statement is that the wave function of this form, when integrated over phi, corresponds to n over 2 Cooper pairs. Okay, so so let me just say that the next step should be to take this wave function, to take the Hamiltonian of the electrons, which is a bunch of kinetic energies plus some truncated form of the interaction, which focuses in on the attractive terms, calculate the expectation value of the Hamiltonian, or actually calculate the free energy probably. But so calculate, let's say calculate the expectation value of the Hamiltonian, and then minimize that with respect to these U's and V's. And then that gives you the wave function and excitations. So we're actually not going to do that. What we're going to do is going to be something different. What we're going to do is just what we did for Hartree-Fock theory. We're going to write down a Hamiltonian, which includes terms which create and destroy, separately, terms which create and destroy Cooper pairs with some amplitude, and which also has the normal kinetic energy of the quasi particles and the chemical potential. We're going to start treat that Hamiltonian. That's a quadratic Hamiltonian in fermion operators, although it has these funny terms that involve pairs of creations and pairs of destruction operators. So it's a little bit different from the kind of Hamiltonian, quadratic Hamiltonian that people use to solving. Nevertheless, it's like every other quadratic Hamiltonian exactly solvable. So we'll solve that, keeping the coefficients as variational parameters, as we did before, and minimized with respect to those coefficients to get the best Hartree-Fock ground state energy that we can get. Now that will turn out to be, but I won't do it in this class because I've involved deriving BCS theory twice, that will turn out to be exactly equivalent to using this as a variational wave function. Okay, so we'll start there tomorrow.